Good afternoon. This is Ed Walsh with the Piatt County Journal-Republican, dated Wednesday, January 8th, 2020. We'll begin today's reading on the front page with the headline articles under the banner of Cerro Gordo Schools. And the headline reads, Longtime Teacher Out at Cerro Gordo. A 17-year teacher in Cerro Gordo is no longer an employee or coach in the district after school board members approved a separation agreement with her at a special meeting on December 30th. Dawn Mann had been a middle and high school math teacher and had also been the head high school volleyball coach since 2014. The school board and Mann were tight-lipped on why the action was taken, but audience members at an earlier meeting indicated it stemmed from an incident earlier this fall. About 20 people spoke to the school board on December 18th, most of them in favor of keeping Mann in the district. Another four addressed the board on Monday, December 30th. Coaches aren't getting the support from homes like they used to, said Jamie Smith. I can't tell you how many highly successful old school coaches we have lost in the past 10 years for various reasons. While several have retired, others have been either forced out by parents by constant complaining or hidden agendas by school administration to get rid of them. After hearing from the public, the school board met in closed session for about 2 hours, with Mann being called in twice during that time. Meanwhile, a crowd of about 60 people waited in a hallway outside of the meeting, some of them hugging Mann. Upon entering the open session, the school board voted 6-0 to approve the separation agreement. From the entire board, we want to thank you for your service, school board president Tony Pirano said after the vote. School superintendent Brett Robinson confirmed the agreement covered Mann's role both as a coach and as a teacher. Additional details on that separation agreement are included in an accompanying story on page 8. Mann compiled a 104-88 record as the high school volleyball coach, including a school record 28 wins in 2018. The squad was 21-15 this past season. Several community members, students, and colleagues spoke up for Mann at the December 18th school board meeting. English teacher Dr. Vicki Gilpin said she was concerned for her colleagues. What are we doing to our non-tenure teachers? I've seen my colleagues way down this semester walking on eggshells, quadruple guessing everything from discipline to assignments to asking for help, said Gilpin. Jennifer Moore, a former volleyball coach and high school French teacher, said Mann was a dedicated coach. Dawn knows the game of volleyball inside and out. She runs organized practices and she pushes the girls to be better, and she is demanding because she tries to get the most out of her players. That's what you should do, and you should want in a coach, said Moore. She can be tough on someone in 1 minute and be their biggest fan and be super praising of them in the next minute. I've never witnessed her crossing any lines that would be deemed inappropriate. She generally cares for every one of her players. She cares not only what kind of player they are, but what kind of person they are. Her coaching style prepares the girls not only for volleyball, but for life, she added. Junior high volleyball player McKenna Morgan Thaler stated, Mrs. Mann is so much more than just a coach. She's a teacher, a mother, a daughter, a leader, and overall. Mrs. Mann pushes us, and she may yell, but it is only for our own good. She wants us to strive and succeed. Mrs. Mann's husband, Tom Mann, was also present. He said that even through the allegations, his wife is aiding one of the students that filed a complaint. For me, she said, it's the right thing to do, and it's constantly what we are telling our kids. Do the right thing, even if someone else isn't doing the right thing. You do the right thing, right? Said Mr. Mann. There's no way my wife could be unprofessional, whether that comes to volleyball or being a teacher, he added. Now, a companion agreement, an opinion article for that first article was on back page A8, and it just headlined agreement details. Former Cerro Gordo teacher and coach Dawn Mann will be paid her salary and stipends for the remainder of the school year under a separation agreement approved by her, the Cerro Gordo School Board, and the Cerro Gordo Education Association. The agreement also includes Mann's resignation as of January 1st, in addition to a letter of recommendation on her behalf from School Superintendent Brett Robinson. The contract was approved at a special board meeting December 30th and also releases the district and Mann from liability and making any claims against each other in relation to her 16-plus years in the district. Neither the employee or the school district have stated publicly what led to the professional divorce. Mann had taught math and science for the district and served as junior high and high school volleyball coach. This agreement is not to be construed or used as an admission of any wrongdoing and or liability whatsoever by or on behalf of the employee and or the board, as each of the undersigned expressly deny any and all liability or wrongdoing in connection with the disputed issues, stated the agreement. Mann will be paid $27,844.39, minus withholdings for what would have been future earnings for the 2019-20 school year. Of that sum, $24,786.64 is for salary, and another $3,057.75 for a junior high volleyball coaching stipend. Per the agreement, that portion of the payout is due by January 17th. Also included is $8,898.01 in salary and coaching pay that Mann earned prior to January 1st, which will be paid on January 3rd. Contributions to her Illinois Teachers Retirement System account shall be made in accordance with the collective bargaining agreement, stated the separation agreement, obtained by the Journal Republican through a Freedom of Information Act request. Despite the separation, Robinson touts Ms. Mann's abilities as a teacher in his recommendation letter. Quote, "As a former junior high math teacher myself, I can confirm that Mrs. Mann has been an excellent middle and junior high school teacher, being equally adept at teaching both math and science," he said. Our next article on the front page is headlined, Decade in Review, Top Stories. Half of our top 12 stories of the decade, we're calling it our decade's dozen, since we just couldn't narrow it to 10, were related to Piatt County schools. They range from good state titles, to bad layoffs during budget crunches, to somewhere in between, depending on which side of the consolidation fence you reside, such as Atwood Hammond annexes into Arthur. But the title of top story in the 2010s goes to a conviction for a murder that occurred more than two decades earlier. We debate each year as to the order of our top stories lists, so we expect even more difference of opinion after presenting our decade's dozen. Let the arguments begin. Number 1. Cold case results in murder conviction. Gregory J. Hauser was convicted of murder in the 1990 death of then-wife, Cheryl Hauser, and sentenced to 55 years in prison. The conviction came 27 years after the murder occurred at Cheryl Hauser's home in rural Mansfield in 2017. Number 2. Headline, Funding Crunch Prompts School Layoffs. Significant layoffs and funding cuts were approved by area school districts in response to less state funding. Cuts ranged from $385,000 in Monticello and Blue Ridge, the latter of which temporarily laid off all of its coaches, to the dismissal of 14 staff members in Cerro Gordo. Story number 3 is headlined, School Reorganizations. Atwood Hammond voters decided to annex into the Arthur School District from 2013. BMET opted to keep its high school after the joint study was done with neighboring Cerro Gordo. Story number four headline is referendum approved on third try. On its third try, the Monticello School District saw voters approve a referendum to upgrade its facilities, this time to update the high school and adjacent Washington Elementary School. Story number five, state title for football sages. On the day after Thanksgiving, the Monticello High School football team made history by capturing the program's first state title. And story number six, middle school girls go back-to-back. Monticello Middle School's 8th grade girls basketball squad captured the IESA 3A title with a 27-25 win over Eureka. The same group of athletes had also won state the year before as 7th graders. Story number seven headline is county budget issues. After seeing fund balances drop by $1 million between January of 2018 and January of 2019, the Piatt County Board spent most of the fall whittling down a budget deficit that started at more than $1 million. The process led to approval of a budget that was still $386,000 in the red, even with staff reductions at the sheriff's and state's attorney's offices. Story number eight headline is prominent magistrate passes away. Piatt County Circuit Court Judge John P. Schunkweller died at the age of 79. He had been on the bench since 1965 and chief judge of the 6th Judicial Circuit since 1994. Story number nine headline reads, former superintendent under investigation. Former Beaumont School Superintendent Daniel Brew is being investigated for possible improprieties at both the Beaumont and Meridian school districts. Story number 10 is headlined, drought devastates yields. An extreme drought in 2012 reduced corn yields to about 120 bushels per acre, 60 to 100 bushels per acre lower than typical years. And story number 11 headline is new hospital building opens. A new Kirby Medical Center building opened and the county purchased the former hospital building. That was in 2011. And story number 12 headline reads, land purchased for rec complex. The city of Monticello purchased 30 acres of land near the Apple Tree subdivision with plans to develop it into a recreation complex. That was in 2010. Turning now to page A2, we have this article. It's under the banner of Piatt County, and the headline reads, state's attorney denies chairman's FOIA request. The Piatt County State's Attorney has denied a Freedom of Information Act request from the County Board Chairman for all of her email correspondence with members of area media and HR consultant, County Emergency Management Agency Director Mike Holmes, and members of the Illinois Emergency Management Agency. The request from County Board Chairman Ray Spencer asked for emails between December 31, 2018 and January 1, 2020. The FOIA filed on January 2nd was denied by the state's attorney's office the next day. Reasons given include their claim that it was overly broad and voluminous. But more importantly, they say it could net Spencer information about employees that he may have disputes with, including their office and the EMA. Attorney/client confidentiality and protection of the county are the main reasons for denying the request, said Piatt County State's Attorney Dana Rhodes. FOIA was made for media, for citizens to get information about their government, she added. It's not for government officials to use against other government citizens. As for the EMA portion of the request, Assistant State's Attorney Elizabeth Dobson said safety was at risk if emergency plans go public. It is completely inappropriate to FOIA the emergency plans we have and the plans we don't have. We don't need to let every terrorist know what our plans are, said Dobson. But Spencer felt the blanket denial of every document he requested is based on a flimsy and incorrect interpretation of the Freedom of Information Act, an interpretation that is not only legally wrong, but designed solely to benefit and protect the public body at the expense of transparency and open government. To allow the state's attorney to say she does not have to comply is to place her above the law. He said he planned to appeal the denial to the Illinois Attorney General's public access counselor. The denial makes a mockery of the FOIA process and should not be allowed to stand. I am asking the public access counselor for careful consideration of each of the public body's legal points for denying the request, said Spencer. Spencer also forwarded to the Journal Republican an FOIA request he had received from WCIA Channel 3 on December 15th, which asked for a year's worth of emails in relation to his capacity as the county board chairman and from his personal email account. At Spencer's request, WCIA narrowed the list to emails between him and county department heads, auditors, state emergency management personnel, and the Journal Republican, among others. That request was fulfilled. As for Spencer's subsequent FOIA sent to the state's attorney's office last week, Rhodes and Dobson said the request was also denied because, number one, they had electronic communications from non-governmental agencies, such as members of the media, that are not eligible through the Freedom of Information Act. Spencer had requested all emails between Rhodes and any person employed by WCIA Channel 3, the Piatt County Journal Republican, and the Champaign News Gazette, specifically naming Lindsey Jones, WCIA, Christy Batista, WCIA, and Steve Hoffman, the Journal Republican. State's attorney officials also say a request for emails with Donna Rogers of Rogers HR Consulting are also not eligible for the same reason. Also requested were emails with the Illinois Emergency Management Agency, including but not limited to Jonathan England, Tezzy Konecevich, and Iris Ducey. The request violates the attorney-client privilege between the state's attorney's office and the department heads in Piatt County, said the state's attorney's office in the denial. EMA correspondence is exempt, said Rhodes and Dobson, because drafts, notes, memoranda, and other records in which opinions are expressed or policies formulated are exempt for safety issues. That communications between a public body and an attorney or auditor that would not be subject to discovery and litigation is exempt, and that records relating to a public body's adjudication of an employee grievance is exempt. The response also claims Chairman Spencer is engaged in the disciplinary process against a particular employee and that it is inappropriate for the requested information to be used against the employee, although Rhodes said there has been no formal discipline handed out at the time of the FOIA request. And now turning to page A3, under the banner of Illinois government, we have this article headlined, Further Mahomet Aquifer Protections Go Into Effect. Among the dozens of new laws that go into effect January 1st is one sponsored by several local representatives to help protect the Mahomet Aquifer. Senate Bill 2027 was passed unanimously in the spring and puts into law some of the recommendations of the Mahomet Aquifer Task Force. Under the question of what changes, the law sponsored by local state senators Scott M. Bennett and Chapin Rose and Representative Carol Ammons, among others, directs the Illinois Environmental Protection Agency to inspect landfills that overlie the Mahomet Aquifer. It instructs the agency to look for whether the landfills reach down to potable water in the aquifer, whether it has an engineered liner system, whether it has an active groundwater monitoring system, and whether waste disposal occurred within the 100-year floodplain. It directs the agency to use existing information from state and federal agencies to determine which landfills pose a threat to the aquifer, which extends from Sangamon to Iroquois counties and runs through Havana, Pekin, Clinton, Monticello, Champaign-Urbana, Rantoul, and Watseka. It also creates a pilot project at the Pekin Metro Landfill. Who does it benefit is the next section. It should benefit the 500,000 people who drink water from the Mahomet Aquifer in east central Illinois, Considering the Mahomet Aquifer is the most important water source in East Central Illinois, I have worked frequently with the Mahomet Aquifer Task Force to ensure it is protected, Bennett said in a statement. They are a tremendous group to work with, and now we can be assured that 500,000 people know the water coming out of their faucets is clean and safe to drink. Under why now? The new law stems from a recommendation of the Aquifer Task Force, which includes Ammons, a Democrat of Urbana, and Rose, a Republican of Mahomet, and is chaired by Champaign Mayor Deb Finan. Turning now to page A7, under obituaries, we have the following death notices of local and area interest. George Bakopoulos, 95, formerly of Monticello, passed away December 7, 2019, in Mission Viejo, California. He was born in Decatur on October 4, 1924. He was raised in Monticello. George worked for his parents' business, Famous Bill and Pete's Cafe, on the north corner of the square, and he graduated from Monticello High School, where he played on the Sages football team. Burial was in Mission Viejo with military honors. Filippo Galbo, 88, of Monticello, passed away at 10:01 a.m. Tuesday, December 24, 2019, at Kirby Medical Center in Monticello. A visitation was held from 5 to 8 p.m. Sunday, mid-January 5, 2020, at St. Philomena Catholic Church in Monticello. The funeral mass was held at 1 o'clock p.m. Monday, January 6, 2020, at St. Philomena Catholic Church, with Monsignor Michael Bliss officiating. Interment was in Monticello Township Cemetery. Memorials may be made to the American Heart and or American Lung Association. Condolences may be sent to the family at www.mackeywrightfuneralhome.com. Cleta Bernice Bruce, 99, of Sadorus, passed away at 7:25 p.m. Monday, December 30, 2019, at Champaign-Urbana Nursing and Rehab in Savoy. Funeral services were Saturday, January 4, 2020, at the Hines Funeral Home, 348 North Pyatt Street in Bement, with Pastor Terry Cooper officiating. Burial was in Craw Cemetery in Sadorus. Hines Funeral Home in Bement is in charge of arrangements. Alvin Ray Baker, 39, of Bloomington, formerly of Weldon, passed away at 2:20 p.m. December 22, 2019. A memorial service will be held at a later date. Condolences may be sent to the family at www.mackeywrightfuneralhome.com. And now, returning to the news and views on page A3, under the banner of Piatt County, we have this article headlined, Flu Outbreak Reported at NH. Internal measures to limit a flu outbreak at the Piatt County Nursing Home have been eased, but entering this week, precautions were still being encouraged when it comes to those visiting the Monticello-based long-term care facility. We don't keep people from coming to visit, but we encourage them all to wear masks. The staff wear masks, and we are continuing to do that now that we have it under control, Nursing Home Director Scott Porter told the County Board Nursing Home Committee on January 2nd. After a resident tested positive for influenza A on December 22nd, another 40 people with cold-like symptoms were tested, with three more being diagnosed with the flu. Anything above two is considered an outbreak, said Porter. An additional two cases of the flu were diagnosed among nursing home staff. That triggered a quarantine, which does not totally isolate patients from outsiders, but does mandate visitors wear masks and encourages them to stay away if they show any signs of illness. For several days, meals were served in patient rooms instead of in the cafeteria as a precaution. That measure has been lifted. Other safeguards included increased cleaning in high-traffic area surfaces, administration of Tamiflu, and the altering of group activities to in-room ones only. Porter added that all four residents who tested positive had received a flu shot this year. And also on page A3, under the banner of business, the headline of this next article is Information on New Newspaper Owner. While there have been some logistical changes, the Journal Republican will continue to serve the community as the top local newspaper in print, supplemented by its strong online presence after a November change in ownership. The new owners of News Gazette Media, Champaign Multimedia Group, became the new owners of the Journal Republican in November. CMG officials say the new ownership means a renewed commitment to the area's local weekly newspapers. We believe very strongly in weekly community newspapers and the responsibility that we have to make sure that the hyper-local news and advertising from rural communities is being facilitated throughout the local area and beyond, particularly across the heartland of the U.S., where news deserts have become more and more prominent over the past several years, said Greg Parato, CMG Vice President and Weekly Group Publisher. Every community deserves to have their stories told, and local businesses thrive regardless of the population size or any other factors, he added. CMG is now the owner of 46 newspapers, many of which come out weekly, and Parado said collaborative efforts and a community presence are at the forefront of his agenda for the newly acquired papers in central Illinois. There will certainly be some amazing synergies for content coverage and advertising opportunities with the other weekly publications at Kankakee, Valley Publishing, and the News Gazette in Champaign, he said. I'm very excited about the opportunity and responsibility that I have as the weekly group publisher to make sure we are putting our best foot forward for the Monticello, Mahomet, Danville, Rantoul, and Paxton communities in Illinois. I look forward to meeting and discussing how the newspapers can better serve each community in the upcoming weeks and months. This is under the banner of Community Media Group. Champaign Multimedia Group is a subsidiary of the Illinois-based Community Media Group. Community Media Group is a family-owned, privately held multimedia company which owns and operates daily and weekly newspapers, direct mail shoppers, and other print distribution products in six states. In addition to newspapers, CMG also publishes community consumer magazines through Community Magazine Group and operates a full-service digital agency, Community Media Digital. CMG began operations in 1996 and has grown steadily as a result of acquisitions and development of new products within existing markets. Senior management of Community Media Group has an extensive range of knowledge and experience in both community, semi-urban, and urban settings and has long been recognized at the forefront of community newspaper publishing. Finally for today, our article is on page A5. It's under the banner of agriculture and headline, Farmers Not Optimistic as They Enter the New Year. The annual Illinois Farm Bureau annual meeting member survey reflected three overwhelming themes. Farmers have less optimism for 2020. There is a profound need to regain lost export demand, and building new global markets is vital for the future. In 2019, farmers were challenged with historic flooding, delayed planting and harvesting, ongoing trade wars, and demand destruction to the biofuels market, all of which were key factors in contributing to a sluggish farm economy and continued uncertainty for our Illinois farmers, said Illinois Farm Bureau President Richard Gubert, Jr. Over half of farmer respondents indicated that it was likely that their farm would continue to be farmed by the next generation of their family after their retirement. This is the ninth consecutive year we've surveyed members to gauge their feelings on key farming issues and concerns, Gubert said. It helps us as leaders ensure we're tackling the issues and needs of our members and prioritizing our resources to the best of our abilities. This has been the Fayette County Journal Republican, dated Wednesday, January 8, 2020. I look forward to reading with you again soon. For Illinois Radio Reader, I'm Ed Walsh.